गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुदेव महेश्वर गुरु साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुदेव महेश्वर गुरु साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। ध्यानमूलं गुरुमूर्तिः पूजामूलं गुरुपादम् मन्त्रमूलं गुरुवाक्यम् मोक्षमूलं गुरुकृपा। गुरुब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुदेव महेश्वर गुरु साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः।
ॐ श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। ॐ श्री नान परमात्मने नमः।
थैंक यू रिश्मा। ॐ श्री नान परमात्मने नमः। ॐ श्री नान परमात्मने नमः। या हेलो हेदर, वेलकम टू यू।
हेलो उषा।
या सो इट विल बी अ डिलाइट फॉर ऑल द ओल्ड डिवोटीज ऑफ नाना टू सी यू बिकॉज़ ऑल ऑफ देम आर फैमिलियर विद हेदर। Because whenever we came to Tiruvannamalai, I think you were there for almost a decade or 13 years in Tiruvannamalai.
I was there almost consecutively for 7 years. And yeah, then I was coming and going a lot over the last 25 years.
Yeah, so whenever Nana was there, yours was a very familiar face. And then you were more like an Indian who were born abroad. Because you would gel so much with all the devotees and you never left us, no? Even after Nana's session, you would be part of the Indian women and not like the foreigners who left by themselves. So you were more like a Nana's family always.
Yes, I think it was the women of Nanagaru that healed my heart.
Yeah. I mean, for each one it's a different way of, you know, getting closer to Nana, and yours was, I think you become a family member to all the devotees, especially here. So, and you enjoyed all of them, and I think you reflected love always, Heather.
Well, you're very easy to love. It takes no effort.
No, but then, you know what, jealousy is the most common thing, and Heather seems to be so beautiful and loving always.
Yeah, I never had time for jealousy because, you know, God gave me this body and this situation, and feeling jealous of someone else is not going to change that.
Yes. So, I mean, Heather was so beautiful. I mean, like, as you said, no? Can you repeat what your friend had asked the other day about she wants to be only in the presence of spiritual people?
Oh, yes. I was at a meeting in Austin, and this older woman said that she only wanted to be in the presence of spiritual people. She didn't want to be with worldly people. And I said to her, I cannot afford the luxury of assuming that I am a spiritual person and someone else is not.
Beautiful.
Because to me, that's a luxury to indulge in such an opinion.
Yeah, because see, I think the spiritual ego is the greatest of all egos, Heather. Because
yes,
that makes that difference, you know, that gives you the feeling that you are different from the others.
Yes.
Which is a huge barrier, because there are no limitations for the true self.
Yes, But, you know, any true saint, true master never, in my experience, never made me feel that I was less than or separate, you know, like separate from them. Yes, the separation pain was there, but it was very clear that it was my separation pain and not because they felt that I was bad.
Yeah. So Heather, now shall we, we'll come from the beginning of how, you know, like how you have been as a child and what has drawn you to, you know, the spiritual life, and then how you've connected with God always.
You know, I had a friend here yesterday that's going through a hard time, and her daughter, her 8-year-old daughter, and I asked them a question because I could feel the similarity. And the answer for both of them was yes. See, I died in the I'm beginning to wonder if that near-death experience so close to birth just changes the life of the life path. So for me, even I have memories even as a baby, of the spirit was stronger than the physical realm. And I suspect it's because I, you know, died in the birth canal and resuscitated. I never experienced feeling that God was a part of my life. The hard part for me was giving like
And you would communicate with him?
Yes. Even as a small child, I would lie in bed. And he would talk back.
Yeah. And it was all within, right? Always?
It was all within.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Someone is saying they can't hear me.
Actually, for a few minutes, whatever you spoke a few minutes back, we couldn't hear Heather.
Yeah. So can you repeat Heather? How you got connected to God as a child?
Right.
Oh, well, no, it's because I suspect it's because I had died close to birth and had to be brought back, because I've asked other people recently, like who had a young child, who also has that sort of connection with nature and everything, and she had also died as a child, and you know, like as a close to birth. So for me, that connection to spirit or God was always there. The hardest part coming to peace with the human realm that I had been born into. So, and then.
Later on in life, I mean, you had a lot of pain as a child also, right? Like, you were in
Yes, I had a lot of situations. Yes, very harsh situation and a lot of abuse. And I think my mother couldn't understand that I was different. It was, for her, it was like all her family were one way, and I was, but there was something different. Strange about me to her. And so I learned to hide away my connection to God. I felt that the one thing I had, I could never make away. So it was always there inside of me. It was just kept fairly, it was kept hidden from my family and the people around me.
Later, how did you first come to Tiruvannamalai, Heather?
I was in a relationship with a man called John Button, and we were offered to go to Tiruvannamalai for a reforestation village development project.
Yeah.
And I was 3 months pregnant, and we arrived, and within 3 days, I was operated on the village hospital. This was a very extremely painful, but while the operation was taking place, I saw this figure, old man, white there, just standing by me, he spoke to me. And he told me the next steps I needed to take to find out what the truth was and why this event had happened in my life.
So, once you came to Tiruvannamalai, the first time was a little painful, right?
It was, my whole time there was very painful.
Grishma, nannu mute cheyamma, nenu maatladinappudu nu mute cheyana.
Yeah, sure.
Heather?
Sorry.
Yeah. So first time you came with Button to Tiruvannamalai, and then because he was given the afforestation work in Tiruvannamalai,
yes,
on the hill. Yeah, which was a really good project for him.
Yes, and I had never heard of Ramana Maharshi or Tiruvannamalai or knew anything about Indian spirituality. I came in completely blind, you know, like I had no idea. And then I had this situation with the miscarriage, and then I became very ill from infections and spent about, you know, 5 months recovering from that experience. And but in that time, I got to spend a lot of time alone, and I would say the kindness of the Indian people was what was healing. You know, the other foreigners were very judgmental of me in many cases, of my pain, or, you know, in the West, there's this thing that people in some ways deny their own suffering or deny their pain. It's like then they say that someone's a victim, and they actually make it worse. But in India, what I found was that there was space for pain to exist. And because of that space for the acceptance of pain, it took the shame away from it. In removing the shame, it allowed room for it to exist without rotting. And it allowed room and air to come into the pain and to be healed. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. So, and then how, I mean, slowly over a period of time, you developed this attachment to the hill?
Yes, that, so when I had the miscarriage, this being, which may have been Ramana, Bhagwan, he said to me, you need to go to Europe. If you go to Europe, you will find out what the truth is, and you will find out what the purpose of your life is. And after 5 months, John and I headed north to the Himalayas. And in the Himalayas, I was attacked by a pack of wild dogs, and I had to fight them off. And then I went to Europe. He went back to Australia. I went to Europe with only one-way ticket and $500. But this message was so strong. And within 24 hours, I met a teacher there. And the only photograph in the room where he was of Ramana and the hill. And he asked every one of his devotees to help me out, and some gave me work and a place to live and warm clothes. And I spent 4 months with him. And then I said, you know, I cannot sit at your feet for the rest of my life. I need to go and find out what works, what is true, what is not true for me. And he said, very good, this is how it should be. But he said to me, the highest teaching is in silence. And he said, I am not at that stage yet, but for you, it would be best to have a teacher who teaches in silence. So that's what he said to me when I left. So as I was heading back to Australia, I went to Tiruvannamalai. And I realized in my 2 weeks there that I needed to go back and just live there. That whatever had taken place there was more true than anything else in my life to that point. So I went back to Australia and saved every cent, and within 6 months was back in Tiruvannamalai. And that was when I met Nanagaru.
So the first time, how did you meet Nana?
So... I had made friends with an American woman called Ray, and she said to me, you know, there's this really nice old man at Novi compound. Why don't you come see him? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And she's like, no, he's just this really nice old man. You come. So I turn up late one day and I sit down and he looks at me. And I felt that I had been hit with a rocket ship. You know, suddenly he looked at me and this voice inside said, everything you have felt as a child is true. Everything else is false. And I started to shake. And he got up and left the room and I couldn't walk. I had to be lifted up. I couldn't get up from the floor. I was so shaken from just the one look from him that I had to almost be carried out of the room. And Dr. Rao was there and he said, oh, you're very lucky. And I was just so shaken. Like I was like, you know, shaking like this. I didn't know what had happened to me because I had no reference, no experience to reference what had taken place, you know. And so, of course, I went back for the next 3 days. He was in town. And every time I went to him, he would look at me and he'd, in confusion and he'd go, who are you? And I would say, oh, I'm Heather from Australia. I didn't understand he was asking me a spiritual question. I thought, oh, I'm not worth remembering. But I formed such an attachment to him. Even though I thought he couldn't even remember who I was from one moment to the next. And so in the next 3 days, I was sitting with him, and he would look at me, and it would be okay for a moment, and then this madness of my mother's voice or some voice would come up inside of me, and it would say, see, he loves you, he sees you're special. And then he would turn away and this other voice would come and go, why would anyone love you? You're just dirt. You're just rubbish. And then, you know, I would feel the suffering of that and I would go down into the suffering and then I'd look up and he'd be looking at me with so much compassion. And I would look at him and then this voice would come again, see, he loves you. You're special. And then he would turn away and then the other voice would come. And then it would be like this dichotomy between good, bad, right, wrong, better, worse, fat, skinny. All the madness of thought would be yelling in my head while I was sitting in front of him. I felt he had put my mind on loudspeaker. And this voice inside of me said, this is how you see me. What is happening inside your head all the time, good, bad. Are you there? Usha?
Heather, I'm here.
So, yeah, good, bad, right, wrong, better, worse. It was like a...
Heather, Mohandaking.
And I was not conscious of it till Nanagaru put my head on my mind on loudspeaker. So I couldn't ignore anything I was thinking. And by the end of the 3 days, I realized that the only true thing I had ever seen in my life was him. But I didn't know how to find that truth inside of me. But I realized that I had to stop lying. That all my thoughts between good and bad, right and wrong, were lies. They were things that I had been taught, but they weren't the truth. That he was the truth, but how to find that. So after 3 days, he left. And I had to go back to Australia for some time after that. And when I got back to Australia, I took myself to bed, basically. I took myself into isolation for 6 months. And I started doing everything I had ever done to win love and approval. And all this self-hatred came to the surface, but I felt I just had to sit through it because I didn't want to lie anymore. I didn't want to smile at anyone so they would smile at me. I didn't want to do anything to make people like me. I just wanted to find out what was true inside. So that's how I first met Nanagaru.
Yeah. But then you continued coming to him because you were living in Tiruvannamalai and then he would visit maybe 3 to 4 times in a year. Every time he came, you were in his presence, no Heather.
Well, after that, see, I didn't know who he was or how to find him. So but I knew I had to go back to Tiruvannamalai. So 6 months later, finally John and I moved to Tiruvannamalai permanently. And I had been in a motorbike accident where my knee had been broken, and I lived 5 miles around the mountain. And it took a while for that to heal, so I would just be in the cottage around the mountain looking at Arunachala all day long. And then I had been doing drawings of Ramana and Nanagaru. And about 5 months after the motorbike accident, someone said to me, oh, Nanagaru is in town. He's leaving tomorrow morning. So I hopped on my bicycle and rode 5 miles into town at 5 o'clock in the morning and waited on his doorstep. And that was the second time I'd seen him, and I was led inside and I gave him my drawing of him, and he held it and he said, I will remember you always. And then he went away, and I didn't even know how to find him or anything about him. I just knew I said to him, I could not forget you.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, Heather. I mean, you were actually bedridden, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then like the last day somebody tells you that Nana is in town, and then you were 6 months, you were sitting, painting Bhagwan, painting Nana, and then you gift it to him the day he's leaving. I mean, these things are so, so beautiful as memories today, if you look back. I mean, so much love, isn't it? Like, unless Guru thinks of us, we don't think of them. And he drew you back, right? In spite of you being on bed, you rode 5 kilometers on your cycle, and then you gifted to him, and he says, I will never forget you.
Yes.
Of course.
But you know, from that very first, he gave me this gift of putting my mind on that. From that day forth, I never have a thought and not hear it. I mean, what a remarkable gift, Usha. Are you there?
Yeah. So, and then how did you first come to Jinnur, Heather? I mean, because see, unless people became quite close to Nana, I mean, like, not many foreigners travel to Jinnur, Heather. I think we can handpick the people who travel to Jinnur to be with Nana. Very few foreigners were really had this great opportunity to be in Nana's presence for long periods in Jinnur. And later on, in later years, they were not allowed much. In 1990s, it was more accessible. And you were one of them who visited Nana quite a lot of times in Jinnur also.
Yes, I had that rare opportunity to often sit on his veranda and be the only person there. I mean, that was such a blessing. But I think it goes back to the first time I met him. Like, I was so shaken. And I was, you know, like at one point I was just crying. And Lakshmi was there with her mother that first time in 91. And Lakshmi's mother said to me, you know, why are you crying? You know, she hugged me and I started crying. And she said, why are you crying? And I said, my mother never hugged me. And she pulled me to herself and she said, then I will be your mother. Lakshmi is my first daughter, you will be my second daughter. And I always had that, you know, like it was such a healing moment for me because my mother had never kissed me or hugged me or touched me like that. So when I go to Jinnur finally, it is in, I think, January of 93. And I'm sitting on Nanagaru's veranda and this thought is going around in my head, you are my father, you are my father, you are my father. But and then it suddenly goes up, you know, my mother, who is my mother? And the next moment, a car pulls up at his gate and Lakshmi hops out. And I am shocked. And she goes around the back of the house.
Just so a minute. Heather, today is Lakshmi's birthday.
Really?
Yes, I was about to speak about her after the satsang, I mean, our interactive satsang was over. Lakshmi left her body in 2012.
Yes.
And how coincidental. I mean, like, I get goosebumps when I think of this, because Nana's presence is so vibrant. And everything, everything has a coincidence, Heather. Everything
yes.
has a coincidence. And you, I know, I very well know that Heather was quite connected to Lakshmi. But how
yes.
did it happen that Heather talks on September 6th, and September 6th happens to be Lakshmi's birthday? It's so good, because you considered her your mother and she treated you like her mother.
No, she was my sister. Her mother said to me, I will be your mother. Lakshmi is my first daughter. You will be
sister.
My second.
So and Lakshmi was your sister.
Yes. And then that day I'm sitting on his veranda and that voice is going, you know, you are my father, you are my father, but who is my mother? And then she pulls up, she goes around the back of his house to his wife. And I say to him, is that Lakshmi from Hyderabad? And he says, yes. He goes and gets her. She comes out and she sits next to me and she looks at me and she says, do you have any message for our mother? And I just started crying. You know, where does the thought come from? And then the event.
Yeah. So, so that was the first time you visited Jinnur, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like you visited Jinnur many times after that also.
Yes, I did. I would go up every 2 months.
Every 2 months. And how long would you spend there?
I would spend a week to 10 days. And
you would just sit, and you would just sit in his presence for long, long hours, day, whole day.
Yes.
And where did you have your food?
I had it with Dr. Rao and Vimala.
Yeah, Dr.
At that stage, they lived in a house.
Dr. Rama Rao Garu is admitted in the hospital now, and he will recover soon.
Yes.
Yeah, he's already recovering, and we were supposed to do one interactive with him also. Probably once he recovers, we do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and he was very, very helpful to all the devotees that came, and then, yeah, it was wonderful that foreigners, few very close to Nana, could stay there for a long period and have his darshan and spend real good time.
And they tried to hide money and pillows, but they wouldn't take. And so when I was leaving, I would hide rupees under the pillow for the food, because they were like, no, 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 you are our daughter, you know, we can't. And I would be like, no, you have to take some money for the food at least.
That's the beauty, yeah? All Nana's devotees. We were like one family, Heather, and then we were treated so affectionately wherever we went. And since it's Lakshmi's birthday, I would like to talk. You have come many times to Hyderabad too.
Yes, I have.
And stayed with Lakshmi and Vijayalakshmi. And spent really good time, like almost like a family member with them. So
can you share your moments with
Lakshmi also? Because Lakshmi's birthday today, it's good to remember her.
If you have any... in the room with Lakshmi, Vijaya, and Lata and Savitri, and also Lakshmi, Murali's wife, and Venuma. There would be like this group, and they would allow me to be in this circle with them, and we would lie on the beds, and invariably Lakshmi would, you know, because she didn't speak much English, and I don't speak maybe 10 words of Telugu, she would lay her head in my lap and ask me to massage her. So I would often be massaging her or giving her Reiki or whatever. And then she would ask through Vijaya lots of questions of me, and then they would laugh and laugh and laugh. And And then the last time I saw her, I was having a very hard time in Tiruvannamalai again. I was quite sad, and she said she had a dream that Bhagwan came to her and said that I needed her. And she came down to Tiruvannamalai with the group of them just to see me, she said, because Bhagwan had said that I needed them. And she came to tell me how much that they loved me and that I was part of them. So it was such a blessing.
That's so beautiful, Heather. I mean, to remember Lakshmi Auntie today, and not only that, because the moment you thought, Nana, you're my father, and who is my mother, and then Lakshmi pops in.
Yes.
That's why I said she's your mother, because she was a mother to all of us.
Yes. She was more like a sister to me.
Yes. And no, age-wise, yes, she was young. She's my sister's age.
Yeah, she was younger.
Sister's age, maybe. Yes, she was younger than you, but she was more, she had this mother principle in her because she was so loving. And
yes.
Then, she was naughty also.
Because I used to say to her, you are so naughty. And she would peel with laughter because I was always telling her she was naughty.
But she was so wonderful, and then she was so welcoming. She was so welcoming because, her house was open to all, always.
Yes.
And everybody felt at home. I mean, even those people who were not, maybe didn't feel so much at home in their very own home, felt so much at home with the Lakshmi and in their residence. And then people in their house had to move, you know, consciously when we were all around because most of us were women.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, she had three boys in the house.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then next, with Nana, what were your most precious moments with Nana, Heather? I mean, what words of his helped you heal inside, or the behavior towards you? I mean, like, there were times when he was a little harsh and he wouldn't look at you. And then those moments, what did you feel? I mean, like, when he was giving all the love and that jaggery thing to everybody, and then Heather was not looked at, what feeling did it give you?
So, you know, because I had grown up with my mother, she used to say to my brother that I'm a very little person. So, you know, I'm someone that says what I mean and mean what I say. And I think, so that's why I try never to be unkind to anyone, because for me, words are powerful. And but my mother was not like that. She used to say, you know, I hate you, I wish you were dead, and things like that. And so it left a deep wound inside of me. And sometimes other people's words I would take to heart. I would feel that I would think they were like me, that they would mean the harshness of their words. Because I would not use harsh words because I felt there was too much power in them. One time in Tiruvannamalai, some of the Westerners had been very judgmental, very nasty to me, and it brought up this feeling from childhood that I am a bad person, that I am, you know, I am not worth living. And Nanagaru arrived in town, and he took one look at me, and he said, "What is happening?" And I said, "I am okay." And he said, "No, you are not okay." And he said, "Today I am coming to your house. You be there." And I lived in a little cottage around the corner of, around the other side of the mountain. And he came with Ramachandran and I don't know who else, but a couple of people. He came to the house and he sat on the bed, and the bed was just a small cottage. It looked out at Arunachala perfectly. And he sat on the bed and I sat at the floor, and he kept saying to me, "Heather, it's a very nice house. You stay in this house. You don't leave this house. Heather, it's a very nice house. You stay in this house. You don't leave this house." And even though it seemed like he was talking about the house, he kept pointing it at me. And when he left, I realized that desire to die, that I am a terrible person, he took with him. That the house that he was talking about was this body, this life. And it felt like he healed that wound like some miracle. Very beautiful, huh?
It's really beautiful, Heather. I mean, there's so much pain in you that people, I know it makes a lot of impact when the words are bad, somebody abuses you, and somebody, especially when you are a sensitive child and when you're very vulnerable to everything around you, and you were so sweet and innocent and you were connecting to God internally, and then the world treats you bad. So it's all, the impact is so much in a child's brain that you carry with you into your adulthood, and then beautifully Nara comes into life. And then you feel
I think
your...
I think the other thing he taught me is that those that injure are suffering themselves. You know, he was so harsh with me at times, but the harshness was because I was harsh with myself. You know, that internal voice from my mother was harsh inside of me, and he reflected that harshness outside, I believe. You know, but he was so compassionate to people that did bad things. And I often notice that. But in the long run, what I learned is that the person that kicks you cries out for help. And he taught me that it's not just the people that are abused that suffer, but the abuser is also suffering. And he really taught me compassion in a way that I didn't understand before. I can't hear you, Usha.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
You were already. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And you were basically an empathetic person always, Heather, because you could sense others' pain, you could sense others' emotion, and then even before they could talk, you can actually feel their vibe.
Yes, that's true. Like with some of the older devotees that spoke mostly, they would feel the physical pain in my body. And I would walk up and put my hands on them because I could feel the pain or the emotional pain. I could feel it inside of me. Yeah.
And also, like, you've been sort of a healer also, as far as I know, Heather, because you really could absorb the pain of others. And then you had this tremendous compassion. You are a compassionate person by nature. So, and also even that has caused an impact on your health.
Well, I sometimes I pray in a way that I imagine myself an empty vessel, and I take their suffering into me, and in that suffering, in that vessel, I offer it to God. Like, but there is a, and my husband, he gets angry at me for doing this, but sometimes it feels that some people can't carry the burden of their own suffering. It's too much for them. And if I can just take a little,
that's really beautiful. I mean, you pray, and then I couldn't just take this when you said the other day, you, as a child, I mean, this is so innocent and beautiful. What did you say to Christ?
Well, yes, as a young child, when I heard that Jesus, you know, had suffered for my sins, I thought, no, I don't want that. Please don't suffer alone. Let me help carry the burden. And David, my husband, he's like, why? Why would you do that? But it was an intuitive prayer. I mean, I didn't think, you know, oh, I'm going to do this. It just used to arise out of my heart. Yeah.
I mean, it's such a wonderful thing, you know, like the childhood innocence. Actually, I was writing an article, and then the one we're going to post tomorrow has this thing where, you know, like Jesus had come in the vision, and then he said, my child, I have paved a path for you. When I was in the hospital, when he was in the third year, we had gone to a church, and there was this, you know, like the father was that day reading on about the Sermon on the Mount.
Yes. Do you remember Nanagari used to come every Christmas and read the Sermon on the Mount at Tiruvannamala?
Yes, he used to love that Sermon on the Mount, and he would always, mention them quite a lot of times, Heather. Because they are profound. That those Sermons on the Mount are very, very profound.
Yes.
Yeah. And also that was the place where he said, the child comes playing at his feet, and then he says, you become like this child, and then you will receive the kingdom of heaven. no matter how much you come sit here or you listen to me or you follow anything, your heart has to be like that of this child.
Yes, I think so.
And Heather, you've been such a wonderful child always. So because no matter your age, maybe you're 60 plus, I shouldn't be mentioning your age here.
It's but, okay. I turned 60 next month. But my hair went white in my 30s.
Yeah, so you've been such a child at heart, though you had so much suffering in your life, and then you took this suffering, you know, your suffering did not take you into a depression. Generally, you know, people who suffer, it drags you down, it takes you into depression. But for Heather, the depression, you know, like was converted to compassion, which is so beautiful, which is so beautiful. The whole,
you know, when I was
pain that you had.
Well, when I was 15, I had a voice speak to me inside, and I don't know if it's just like, you know, the inner guru or what, but the voice said to me, if you are not careful, you will become the very thing that has hurt you. And the only way to stop this from happening is you must never allow yourself to become bitter or indifferent. And it said to me, you've had many lessons in this life about what love is not. But the rest of your life, you must dedicate to learning what love truly is.
This is amazing, Heather. I mean, more than the subject, more than spirituality or whatever we tag ourselves, this is so, so profound what you said right now. You know, like, you know what love is not.
Yes.
In this life, you have experienced what love is not. And so you
yes.
dedicate your life to show, I mean, to feel what love is and to show what love is. I mean,
so that message was given to me at 15, like never become bitter, never become bitter. Dedicate your life to learning what love truly is. So I have been lucky, dear. You know, that guidance was there.
In spite of all the suffering, all the pain, all the abuse, I mean, it's very difficult for anybody, Heather, without receiving any love to evolve into a beautiful, blossom into a beautiful spiritual flower. I mean, you are tremendously blessed, though physically it appeared like you were not given all the love that all of us received from Nana. But internally, he was, you know, churning you, removing you from all the pain. He was making you reflect your psyche. And then he gave you all the strength to pull yourself out of it and made you so independent.
Yes, he did. You know, even when I left and I came to the U.S., you know, when I was heartbroken to live, but I had a dream of he was in a large group and he walked around and he stood in front of me and he said, if I could offer you one thing right now, what would it be? And I said, freedom. And he said, never before have you asked me for this. I am very happy with you. I am very, very happy with you. And that was the dream I had after I left India.
Oh, you had a dream of Nana?
Mm-hmm. That was the dream where he said to me, if I could offer you one.
So he asked you, what if there is one thing that you would ask me, what would you ask me for? And you asked
yes.
freedom. That's wonderful.
And he
said, this is the first time.
That's why he said,
this is the first time.
Yes.
So you've been, so how are you not spiritual? Because your entire story reflects only spiritual life, Heather. And you say
yes,
you don't have the luck.
I don't have the what?
You don't have the luxury of calling yourself a spiritual person or a spiritual speaker.
What?
I mean speaker.
Well, no, I don't have the luxury of assuming that I am spiritual and someone is not.
Correct. Wow.
You know, I mean, it's not
that.
It's
yes,
not about
yes.
whether I am. How can I see that I am this and they are not? Because any great soul I met saw everyone as the same. They may have seen the personality differences or the the life history differences, but the spirit, the soul, you know, was always the same. So, you know, if I want to think of myself as a spiritual person and someone else is not, I'm creating separation straight away.
I mean, this is something which is very profound. I mean, this statement is very important for everybody. I mean, especially those who, you know, are in this path. We want to come out of our ego and we want to lose this separateness, but then we have this feeling that others, I mean, in the world, people are worldly and we are spiritual. Yes, this barrier, this separation, that we are different from others, has to drop if we have to get rid of our ego, because spiritual ego is a monster.
Yes, it's a very
it's a monster. It's a tricky monster. Yeah. So
sorry.
Unless you drop this, we really don't achieve anything at all. Yeah, and I also have a next.
Putting my mind on loudspeaker. So every time this ego steps up, you know, when it wants attention, there's another thought that comes instantly afterwards. Ah, look at that. See, it's there again. You know, so it's like I can catch hold of it each time. This is the blessing of that.
So it was like, for you, it was constantly an inner awareness. You were in the awareness rather than the outside world. Your look was always within, so it was like a projector inside you, which was showing you what your mind is speaking all the time, and it was like you were watching and witnessing it, and it's so loud.
And it's so loud, and I couldn't ignore it. Well, when I was young, it was very painful. When I was younger, that voice had more control. You know, it would be there, you know, going, oh, look at that, and what about this? And, you know, like it had all these value judgments that had been imposed upon me from my life experience. You know, but with Nanagara, I realized that they weren't true. They were just value judgments that had been imposed, but it took years to unravel the tendency of them. You know, it didn't happen just because that experience happened or that understanding. It took constant attention over many years for the value judgment to lose their power.
This is so important, Heather, because everything from outside has an impact on you.
Yes.
Yeah, and they become so strong inside, they get so deep-rooted inside, it becomes very difficult for you to pull out of them.
Yes, exactly.
And then you need a lot of master's help, and at the same time, as you said, a constant effort, alertness, and
yes,
awareness, and you slowly, you come out of it.
Yes, it
and
takes
also
time.
Nana, it takes a lot of time. Nana always said that, yeah, similarly, we have a lot of vasanas inside.
Yes.
When we are in the path, because we are already met the master, we know about the truth, we know about self-knowledge, yeah, we have to attain the state of oneness, and to attain that, all these become, you know, like boulders and, you know, huge rocks of obstacles.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I remember Nana saying is that we don't know what is in our heart. We don't know what tendencies lie there. It is only by the grace of the Guru that the tendencies that lie, you know, in the seat of the heart are brought to the mind, that they may be seen clearly and then let go. And, I mean, it's such a remarkable statement, because I believe that to be true, because as long as we ignore something or we deny something, we can never be free of it. We have to constantly be vigilant, constantly pay attention to what is happening.
Yeah, correct. that's why it's, I mean, the true spiritual journey begins only when you quietly witness from within and see the cinema of mind on the screen, and you detach yourself from it, and slowly it leaves.
Yes.
It, as you said, it takes quite some time, but we need to be vigilant throughout for it to totally go away.
It's true. I think if I could encapsulate my journey in four things that have helped. The first was intentionality. What is my true intention? Really, what is my intention? My intention was, you know, like a lot of people, I would hear they want peace or they want this. For me, it was always to love. That was my intention. And so I had to look at anything that was an obstacle to that love. And so the second point I came to was vigilance. Pay constant attention. Be vigilant. And the third I came to was ruthless self-honesty. You know, be prepared to see the very worst in me and be honest with myself about it. And the fourth was self-compassion, to realize that even these seemingly very negative tendencies were part of the human condition, and that to have compassion not just for others, but for myself. And those things have helped me since meeting Nanagaru.
Beautiful, beautiful. So could you, Heather, repeat these 4 points just once? I don't need an explanation, but just repeat the points. First thing you have learned was?
Intentionality. What is one's true intention?
Yes.
The second?
Beautiful, beautiful. Wait a minute, Heather.
Yes?
Intentionality, this is so very, very important, because many people come to Nanagaru, right? I think there were thousands and thousands of people, be it from Telugu people, be it Tamil people, be it from the north, be it from the foreigners. The intention with which you came to him was not truth for everyone. It was not truth for everyone. So everybody had something to seek. Everybody had something to seek, Heather. And it's so beautiful that you checked your intention of why I'm here, and you see that you have come here for love and love alone.
Yes, and not for Nanagaru to love me. I think he made that very clear to me. He was not willing to indulge the need for personal love with me. And so I had to check that, you know, I'm there to learn to love, not to be loved.
Wow. Yeah. That's really, really rare, Heather, because we have full-time received 100% unconditional love from Nana, and we kept seeking and seeking and seeking, and it never crossed many, many of our minds that it is love that you have to give others, not just seek full-time. This is one profound lesson which all of us have to learn from you, Heather, is always seeking love is something, but always learning to love others is something really, really beautiful and profound. And what was your next thing?
Vigilance, to pay constant attention.
Yeah. One minute, Heather.
Yes.
Heather, I can't hear you. Yeah. Heather, repeat
I'm not
again.
Speaking.
So
vigilant.
Attention.
Constant attention. Don't ignore anything. Don't deny anything. Just look at what is true.
The next
is ruthless self-honesty. To be very ruthless with one's awareness of one's own tendencies, whether it's jealousy or hatred or lust or whatever it is, but to be aware of them as they're happening, to catch hold of them, to not indulge, but to catch them and say, oh, this tendency lies within me.
And the last one is?
self-compassion. For me, this was the hardest
compassion.
Learned. Well, no, it was easy for me to feel compassion for the suffering of others. But it took a long time to learn compassion for my own suffering and realize that I am not separate from God's compassion. You know, that I don't have to be a perfect example of a human being to be, you know, worthy. That the self-compassion was necessary for me to learn to just allow room for to exist as I am.
Very beautiful, Heather. I mean, it's really, really beautiful. These 4 points, I mean, like the 4 things that you have really mentioned here. I mean, I think that's the entire sadhana. I mean, it's the entire practice for a spiritual aspirant. And yeah, as you said, you don't need to discriminate between spiritual aspiration and not. I think it's trying to be a complete human being in the first place.
Yes. I would say, you know, when I would tell people that Namigaru didn't make me a more spiritual person. He made me more human. He taught me about my humanity. And that a lot of the things that I was enduring were part of the human condition. You know, and I didn't have to judge myself for not being perfect or not being, you know, spiritual in that term or not, but that the human condition was made up of these things, and by becoming aware of it, it allowed me to perceive it in others and to perceive that their journey also had this suffering, and that if I, through my words or actions, could help them on their own journey through these minefields, then that was a gift that he had given me.
Amazing, Heather. Amazing. I mean, you have evolved. You have evolved from pain and suffering with so much grace. And then Nana had churned out all that was in your heart, including all your vasanas and seeds, right in his presence. He made you fight them. He made you come out of them. And then today, you have become a reflection of him by having learned to love everyone unconditionally and at the same time loving yourself for what you are.
You know, I don't think of myself loving unconditionally. What I've learned is that love is not personal. Love is not an emotion. It's a state of being that sits in the floor, you know, in the seat of the heart. And one either sits in that seat of love or one does not. But you can't love this and not love that. You either love or you don't love, because love doesn't come and go. It just is a state. And it doesn't need another being or another situation to feel that love.
It happened naturally for you.
What's that,
Sia? To be in the state of love by itself, just as love. It's got nothing to do with people or situations. You are just love.
Yes. And it's true for all of us that all the rest is just, you know, what we're taught in this life experience. The mind wants to attach to this and that, but it's all, it's just taught information. It's not the truth. The truth is that love exists because we exist.
Yeah. So, and then your journey continued, and then when was the last that you saw of Nana, Heather?
I don't remember. I don't remember. You know, yes. I don't remember, dear.
Yeah, that's okay. But you knew Lakshmi Aunty left. You met Lakshmi before she left? No, you did, right?
Yes, she came to Tiruvannamalai that time to see me. That was in 2010. And after that, something happened in me. It's like a lifetime had suffering that a hand had been put inside and removed it by the roots. So 2010 was when things started to change for me. And that was the last time I saw Lakshmi.
Heather, I can't see you. The screen is fine.
Yes, the screen is fine. I can see you and hear you.
Yeah, I can't see you. Vishma, can you see us?
Yes, we can see both of you.
Yeah, I can see on my screen. That's okay, yeah. So Heather, and then now, after Nana left, I mean, like, you got to know that Nana left, or it was much later that you knew him?
No, it was almost instantly. I was in Thailand, in northern Thailand, and there was a Holy Mother in northern Thailand that someone had taken me to visit, and it was the first time I met her. And it was the day that Nana had left. And I was sitting at the back of the hall, and I felt his presence. And I felt many knots within me that were still, like, not that I could name them, but it was like a knot just unraveled like that within me as I sat in her presence and I thought of him, and he had left that day. I think either you had contacted me or someone had contacted me, and I knew, you know, within 24 hours that he had left.
I think we messaged on the messenger, and then
yes.
you said to Shabera, you asked where are you, and I said Nana left his body.
Yes.
Yes, and then you told me, yes, you were in Thailand, and then you felt Nana's presence.
Yes. And I felt his loss, not regret.
Yeah. This is really, really amazing and beautiful. I mean, like, you came when you were in 30s to Nana, and then he guided you at every step, though physically maybe you didn't meet him quite often, or maybe you had a gap in between, but that has got nothing to do with the internal work that constantly kept happening all through. And you were evolving so naturally from within, because it was always an inner journey, and your guidance also mostly was from within, isn't it, Heather?
Yes, it's true. It was mostly within. There was always a guiding voice, and his presence. I think what he gave to me initially was the knowledge that what I had felt within me was true, and that everything else was just opinion, and, you know, between good, bad, right, wrong. And it was the opinion that were creating my suffering, but the knowledge of what was truth was already there, and he reflected it in a way that no one else had at that point in my life. It was like looking in a clean mirror and seeing oneself for the first time, rather than looking in a dirty mirror.
So you were reflecting in the pure consciousness, and then everything that is not you was seen in a very big image, and then you you wanted to get rid of it because that's not you, and slowly the process...
No. I don't even know if I wanted to get rid of it because it wasn't me. I think there was... I think I just didn't want to lie to myself. I didn't want to be a liar. And I didn't want to lie to other people by pretending to be anything that I wasn't. I don't know if I had a real there was a drive for purification, I would say. That was a number one drive, that longing for purification. And so to remove the, it was not enough for me to just assume that, you know, I was a spiritual person or something. The tendencies had to be, you know, for me, removed one by one because the desire for purification was so strong.
I think that's the most important thing, because the drive for purification is the beginning of purification itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and I would the say, drive, yes, if there was...
The drive itself happens from grace.
I mean, I remember I asked an astrologer once, I said, is it possible for my heart and mind to be purified of all fear and longing this lifetime? And I think that was the question.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I remember this incident, Heather. I think after Nana left, when you came to India, because when we messaged to each other, you told me that you were coming to India.
Yes, I think I was already in Tiruvannamalai, and David was arriving. And so we messaged, and we arranged for you to fly into Chennai the same day as he arrived.
Yes, you told you were also flying. Yes, and then... And you had this thing that you wanted to go to Chidambaram with me, you said, right?
Well, yes. I had this, you know, like I often have had this voice for life. And we were in this taxi going back to Tiruvannamalai, David and you and I. And I said to you, I keep having this voice yell in my head, and it says, you need to go to Chidambaram of Usha. You need to go to Chidambaram of Usha. And it kept repeating over and over again. And you said, I had this dream or vision where Nanagaru told me, Usha, you need to go to Chidambaram temple. Do you remember? And you said to him, are you sure, Nana? I think he's here to come, and I think he's over to them.
Yes, because, I mean, this is such a coincidence, because like every other coincidence, a divine coincidence, it happened that... I think Nana was admitted in Apollo Hospital, Heather.
Yes.
And Vizag Hospital. October 13th was the day he got admitted.
Yes.
He got admitted on October 3rd, and he left his body on the December 29th.
Okay.
Okay. So, on October 12th, I traveled to him, I think, on October 15th. Because I had to go for a longer duration. Mm-hmm. So I had to, you know, like the moment I got to know he got admitted, I had to clear all my cases in the clinic. I had to, you know, arrange things for people at home. So it took me a day's time. And that night I had a vision of Nana. And he showed me the whole 3 months period in one short vision of mine, where he was sitting in a room on his bed. And then in a devotee's house, as usual, I mean, it was so real, it was not like a dream, where he was sitting on the bed, and then I went to him, he was quite healthy, normal and nice. And then we had a very good conversation. Nana and me had a very good conversation with each other, and after some time, he said, maybe I'll go to rest, and when I wake up for tea time, we will speak again. And then I came out, I said, Nana, you rest, and then... I come for his tea time, and he's gone so weak. He became so weak and unhealthy, and then he was, I mean, he couldn't even get up from the bed. He was so weak, and he looked thinner. He looked like he lost weight. And I said, Nana, what's happening to you? Just a while ago, you were good and you were healthy, and now I see you. You've gone down, you've become so weak, you can't even get up to hold something. And he said, yes, the time has come. And he said, you don't have to worry about this, but I want you to remember this, that you should go to Chidambaram once.
Huh.
said, don't forget this. Go to Chidambaram once. And that was the dream I had. I said, Nana, why Chidambaram? Because it's Tiruvannamalai, we travel together always. And even if you want me to go, I would go to Tiruvannamalai. But why Chidambaram? He said, no, Usha, you visit Chidambaram, you have started your spiritual journey there. And you remember Heather? So we met in Chennai airport and we traveled to Tiruvannamalai. And it happened to be the 27th Jan, because it was correct 1 month according to stars, you know, like we have these things according to stars and according to date. So according to star only they do all these, you know, all these rituals.
Yes.
Which we do. And the first month ritual, I was in Tiruvannamalai because we planned it together, and it just happened that exactly 1 month after Nana left his body, according to the star, that is according to the city, I was in Tiruvannamalai. So from, I stayed at Nangaru Ashram, and then I booked for Abhishekam in all the Shiva temples for Nana, and also did some Sadhu Bhiksha, because that was an auspicious day, and I felt I had to do something for Nana in Tiruvannamalai.
Yes.
And then you happened to be there, and we were supposed to travel on Sunday to Chidambaram, and you said, Usha, I would like to go to Pondicherry also, and the shops would be open, and you had some work which got pending in Tiruvannamalai, and we happened to travel on Monday, which happened to be 29th January, which was according to date the day Nana left.
Yes.
I mean, this is so amazing, because 27th was the day Siddhi, according to Siddhi, it was 27th, and I had conducted all the, you know, important things in Tiruvannamalai for Nana. And 29th, as he said in the dream, we were in Chidambaram. It was according to the date that he left his body, exactly 1 month.
Yes.
And it happened, and it was amusing. I mean, it was amazing and astonishing, because that was the day that comes once in 180 years, is what the pujari in the temple said. And there was a huge procession going on in the temple with huge drums, drum beats, and it was all, you know, like, I mean, hair on end feeling throughout. We went to just visit the temple for an hour, and we stayed back for almost half a day there.
Because it was this huge Abhishek, and
the huge Abhishek going on, and
I think it happens only once every 108 years, because Shiva's day of the week, the day of the month, and then the stars all align only once every 108 years. He happens to be there the day of the month.
And see, the guidance that came in your head that you have to go to Chidambaram with Usha, and the guidance that Nana had given me in the vision, saying you have to visit Chidambaram, and then we happened to be together, and according to TV, I was in Tiruvannamalai doing all the rituals I could for Nana, and then according to date, we were in Chidambaram, and it happened to be the day which comes once in 180 years, and Nataraj was glowing.
Yes, it was amazing. It's such a powerful temple also. I mean,
it's such a powerful temple, and it was like, I mean, these incidents make us, you know, we realize, Heather, we don't exist apart from him, do we?
No, and I think also it's like showing us him in Nataraj's, you know, like, you know how Nataraj dances the universe. I think it showed Nana in that aspect, in the aspect of ether, because he was no longer bound by the body. So that aspect of ether was where his presence is now.
What a wonderful way of closing this. We are just on time. We are supposed to close at 8:15, and you tell me Nana was the ether aspect from then. I mean, Nana left his body, but he's the ether aspect, and we were with the ether aspect of Lord Shiva, Lord Nataraja, and his dance continues as our satsangs too.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah, because he's in Nataraja form now, as you say, the ether form, and then he's encapturing us, all of our hearts. And we are doing this all this in his extreme love, Heather, because we had no plan of starting any we had no plan of starting any interactive satsang in the first place. Grishma was one who was doing his website work for a long time now, and from the time we have begun this, it has begun with such huge love from Nana, and as you said, from the ether aspect of Nana, and he makes us all, you know, it's like a rotation of the wheel, as he said, it's a completion of your spiritual reel, because it started from Chidambaram, and then he wanted me to pay my obeisances, like, I mean, my gratitude to Lord, because it's a complete cycle of, you know, being in the glorious presence of Nana all through this 2.5 decades. And then,
the first time I went to Chidambaram was you when you were a student there, and we had not long known each other.
So, all pervasive Nana is working so strongly even today, and I mean, he will continue to work because he was never the body, and he always tried to tell us, I'm never the body, I'm the grace that's always in your heart, and all of us feel tremendously in our hearts, and it's so easy to travel because he made it also easy when he was present itself, Heather. As you said, all the vasanas were drilled out, taken out, and whatever little that is remaining, as you said, we just have to witness them, come out of them, and then establish ourselves forever for good in our heart, which is our true love.
Yes. Because love is not personal. Not a girl.
Yeah, love is
personal.
But this person is not. So with this, we will close our session. It's so wonderful to have you here, Heather. And
thank you.
The aspect of love that the aspect of love that you spoke is so true, because more than the subject that Nana spoke, it was his love that transformed all of us.
Today,
every word he spoke, every gesture of his was filled with so much love and compassion that I think most of us were modified, transformed, and made into beautiful beings in his very, very, very love. And to see another reflection of Nana's love today on the screen is such a delight.
Well,
so anything you've got to say to end this session? You want to say something, Heather?
You know, I would say that it wasn't just Nana. It was all the women with Nana, all the devotees, and their love, their acceptance of me that was so wonderful, that was so amazing, and I value and appreciate all of you, and you're always in my heart.
Thank you, Heather. It's such a blessing and wonder to have you here, and this is also a part of Rana's love and grace, and it happened to be on the birthday of Lakshmi, whom you thought was the mother, because you were asking, who is the mother, who is the mother? And both of us are, I mean, Nana is with us, Lakshmi is with us, we are all one in that beautiful divine love, and we will continue to be.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Usha.
You're blessed.
So we end our session with this. Om Shri Nana Paramatmane Namaha. Bye, Heather.
Bye, love. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Heather, disconnect your mic. Yeah. So, I mean, Grishma, are you online?
Didi. Yeah, this is
English, so let me speak few minutes about Nana's interview, and then I'll continue in Telugu. Okay? So it was a wonderful session with Heather so far, and because we have to, I mean, Nana's message also we need to listen. So This was the last interview that was conducted by Mr. Pradeep Krishnan, who was, for a very long time wanted the interview with Nana, and he happened to come after. I mean, like, he kept asking over the phone, when shall I meet Nana, and Nana couldn't give him the appointment. And finally, it happened for Krishna Pushkaralu in Vijayawada, and he was coming to Jimnur, but Nana told him to stop in Vijayawada because we had a sudden program, change of program, that he would not be in Jimnur, but he'll be traveling to Vijayawada. So he told Krishnan to get down the train there and then to come to Ammaji's house, actually, because Nana stayed there for 2 days, and all the devotees from all the places we had been to Vijayawada with Nana. And this interview that happened in Ammaji's house is so profound, and this was the last interview that Nana had given before he left his body. So the interview goes like this. I would read out to you all the interview because it's really beautiful. It covers Nangaru's life, it covers Nangaru's teachings, and it covers the purpose of Nana's life on this planet. So it began like this. Life of Sri Nanagaru, 1934 to 2017. Bhupati Raju Venkata Lakshmi Narasimha Raju was born on September 23, 1934 to Sri Suryanarayana Raju and Srimati Rajayamma in a remote village, Kumara, West Godavari district of Andhra Pradesh. His father died when he was very young, and he was raised by his mother and grandmother. The young boy would visit several holy places with his grandmother. In his 20s, he dreamt of Sri Ramana Maharshi, whose overpowering presence remained with him forever. Thereafter his spiritual quest increased manifold, and ultimately in 1982 he attained self-realization. In the course of time, his spiritual radiance attracted seekers who experienced deep peace and joy in his presence. Soon he became Nanagaru, revered father to one and all. As devotees grew in numbers, he started traveling all over Andhra Pradesh, reaching out to people through discourses. Nanagaru gave equal importance to Jnana Marga and Bhakti Marga, saying that Jnana without Bhakti is dry and tasteless. Though he focused on Ramana Maharshi's path of self-inquiry, in his discourses he emphasized on the teachings of all the great masters from all religions. He spoke the language of the common man. The most profound philosophy and intricate spiritual concepts were presented with simple anecdotes and stories, so that even simple uneducated housewives in villages could understand easily. Several devotees experienced glimpses of enlightenment in the presence of this master. Not only seekers of truth, but people of all categories came to him. He received everyone with warmth and compassion and guided them in the proper way. He was also involved in a number of charitable activities and social work, helping many poor students, constructing houses for the poor, taking care of the destitute. All these things Nana did, like Jesus would say, what you do with the right hand, let the left hand not know of it. And similarly, Nana has done all this without a second person knowing about this. Though Nanagaru has left his body, he continues to live in the hearts and souls of hundreds of his devotees, and he still continues to guide them all in his same compassion that he showed when he was in his body. And the article itself begins like this: everything happens in its own time. This interview was conducted by Pradeep Krishnan for a Kerala magazine called Life Positive. This interview was conducted for an article of Nanagaru to be published in the book Life Positive. It's a book for whom? They keep collecting.
Didi, there is some disturbance from your end. I think it's some fan sound or something. Sorry, turn off chairs.
Fan turn off chairs. Now is it okay now?
Yeah, much better. Much better.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just a minute. Charan. Yeah. Yeah. So, this was the article that was published in Life Positive, a Kerala magazine, where they take interviews from really profound, gentlemen from all over India. All these spiritual people, spiritual aspirants, those who are into devotional path. I mean, basically the magazine itself is a very good book where they have articles from very profound people all over India, and one of them was of Nanagaru Anmata. So the article goes like this: the spiritual journey of Bhupati Raju Venkata Lakshmi Narasimharaju, born on September 23, 1934 in Kumara, West Godavari of Andhra Pradesh, leading from BVKLN Raju to Nanagaru, the journey from BVKLN Raju to Nanagaru, adored by hundreds of disciples, is quite interesting. When he was 23 years old, Ramana Maharshi appeared to him in a dream and completely transformed his life and paved way for attaining self-realization at a very young age. At 83 years old, Master's health was not conducive to give an interview. The date had to be postponed several times, and Nanagaru, the revered father in Telugu, remarked, "In what manner, how and when something has to be done, it happens exactly in that way." Ante, he was saying, whatever has to happen will happen at its own right time. That's why he took the title as "Everything Happens in Its Own Time." Finally, that day happened about 6 months back in a devotee's apartment in Vijayawada, Andhra Pradesh. Thanks to the untiring efforts of Dr. Usha, Hyderabad-based dentist, she's a close disciple who had been Nanagaru's constant companion for 26 years. Dressed in a spotless white dhoti, shirt and angavastra, cloth worn over the shoulder, Nanagaru majestically walked into the main hall of the apartment, where around 50 devotees were eagerly waiting for his darshan, for their guru and father figure leaves no one dissatisfied. He gives peace and guidance, spiritual instructions and advice for dealing with the life challenges. The dress, the walk and the face reminded me of my late Tata, my maternal grandfather. At once I felt close to him, sitting on a sofa and holding my hand. He answered all the questions. He repeated the questions to Dr. Usha and to make sure that I had grasped them correctly. His eyes sparkled and his words were brilliant, vibrant, reflecting his soft demure. Even today, many months after that eventful day, I still feel the intense devotion in the eyes of those devotees. Their ears keen to catch every word, reminding me of the glory of our Rishi Parampara. When I presented him a copy of Life Positive, pat came the response. I understand that Life Positive is a friend and guide to many individuals. It lays the foundation for future generations. It teaches right understanding, right attitude, behavior, speech and living. It is a tonic for the present and the future generation. I wish Life Positive all the success. So now begins the question answer session, and he asks Nana, the first question is, how did you come to the spiritual path? So Nana answers, in March 1954, my grandmother and I went to Rishikesh and met Swami Sivananda. Swamiji blessed me saying, be good and do good. He also said, being good is very difficult than doing good, as to practice karma yoga, you will have to live in universal consciousness. In the same year, we visited Varanasi and its spiritual atmosphere attracted me. We stayed there for about 9 days. I was greatly influenced by the mighty Ganges as well as Kashi Vishwanath Mandir, the temple dedicated to the Lord of the Universe. Slowly, spirituality entered me, and one day in 1982, while I was sleeping in the Maori guest house of Sri Ramanashramam, I realized the truth. The second question posed to Nana was, how did you get attracted to the teachings of Ramana Maharshi? Then Nana's answer was,
though I have never met Ramana Maharshi, I have had several experiences. In 1957, in a dream, I saw an old man with sparkling eyes. After 6 months, I came across an advertisement announcing the publication of 10 pamphlets on the life of Mahatmas, including the life of Sri Ramana Maharshi. He was the same old man whom I had seen in the dream. I instantly felt thrilled seeing the picture, and my whole body shivered. Months later, I got a chance to read B.V. Narasimha Swami's from Ramanashrama book stall, the book called Self-Realization, following which my interest in the teachings of Sri Ramana Maharshi and it got deeper. What he said was, after reading this book, Self-Realization, the teachings of Sri Ramana got deepened in Nana. In Jan 1959, I visited Sri Ramanashramam for the first time. After coming back to Jinnor, my native place, I decided to dedicate my life to spreading the teachings of Bhagawan Sri Ramana Maharshi Soon, I started touring all over Andhra Pradesh, delivering speeches about Sri Ramana. Thereafter, I used to visit Tiruvannamalai every year and did Girivalam. Girivalam meaning circumambulation of the Mount Arunachala, which is considered as Lord Shiva himself, and got myself spiritually charged. On one such occasion in 1982, while I was sleeping in the Mowri guest house, I had glimpses of the truth. So now Krishnan asks Nana, please explain the experience that you had in the Mowri guest house, for which Nana replied, as that wonderful experience was very subtle, I am still unable to define it. I was semi-conscious and felt my Sahasrara chakra opening. My heart opened up, and immediately I was completely immersed in absolute bliss. Before that, I had never had that experience, and I never tasted such bliss in my life before. I considered it the grace of Bhagavan Sri Ramana, and I became his child. From that moment, my life completely changed. What I felt within, I started spreading to all those who came in contact with me. Soon, people even from abroad with difficulties and sorrows started visiting me. I considered that it was the culmination of what I had acquired from my previous births. After Ramana came into my life, I began to love human beings and start doing a lot of social work. In fact, I became a complete man. As Heather mentioned in all her in the entire interactive session, this is what Heather was talking about. You see, it's such a coincidence. The divinity has such amazing plan. If only we could fit into this plan, we have nothing to actually think about. If we think of, here Nana in the interview, he was saying, what was he saying? He became a complete man. He didn't say he was a saint. He didn't say he was God. He was mentioning that he, by realizing the truth within him, by the love of Bhagwan, by the love of, the love of Nana for Bhagwan has instigated this realization in him. So love is the way and love is the destination. And also what he said, after the realization, his love towards humanity grew. He started loving everybody unlike before, unconditionally, and started doing a lot of social work. In fact, he specifically mentioned that I became a complete man. What should one do? And the next question was posed to Nana was, what should one do to remain in Bhagwan Ramana's consciousness or self-consciousness? How can one remain continuously in Ramana's consciousness? For which Nana said, love him, adore him, and merge into his love. Somehow, this session is so totally full of love. And I think it's Nana's love that he wants all of us to realize, that we've always been in love and we need to live his love. Only suggestion that Nana, the answer that he beautifully gave when Krishnan asked was, the question that was posed was, what should one do to remain in Bhagavan Ramana's consciousness? And what did Nana answer? Love him, adore him, and merge in his love.
you will have the experience of universal consciousness by understanding the simplicity of his teachings as well as his life. One can feel Bhagwan's presence. According to Sri Ramana, nobody is in bondage. Find out the real I and realize the one all-pervading consciousness. That is the only way to freedom. See, again, he says freedom. Heather, he came in Heather's dream and asked Heather, if there is anything you want at all, if there is one thing you want to ask me, what is it that you would ask? And she asked for freedom. And here Nana is saying, if find out the real I and realize the one all-pervading consciousness, that is the only way to freedom. To me, his teachings are original, as he had opened a way for humanity to merge jnana with bhakti. If one reads Ramana's words with one's heart, love will definitely blossom within. And then next question posed to Nana was, what according to you is God realization? And for which Nana answers, the meanings of the words truth realization, God realization and enlightenment are one and the same. Without self-knowledge, there can be no self-realization. Our true self is in our heart, the dwelling place for unlimited peace and bliss. Understand that you came into the world to get self-realization. The world will mirror your defects and weaknesses and the reasons as to why you are far from self-realization. So what Nana is explaining here is, the world, now very human birth is taken for the purpose of self-realization, which most of us have forgotten. And what made us forget it is our weaknesses and our defects. So what Nana says is, the world is nothing but a mirror. What will it show? It will show you your defects and weaknesses and the reasons why you are far from realization. So the world, you will have to, you know, take this world only to an extent where you see the defects in yourself, you know your weaknesses, you reflect on it and slowly come out of it. Once you come out of it, you realize your very own true self. All you have to do is get rid of the defects, the weaknesses, and the reason why we are away from him. This is reflected where? In the world. So the world shows you what you are. You reflect it in your consciousness. And as Heather said, everything has come in our interactive session today. What was Heather telling in Nana's presence? What happened? All these thoughts were magnified and it was so loud. It made her realize, yes, these are all my mistakes. These are all my vasanas. These are all my tendencies. So they are loud and Nana is, you know, throwing light on them. Now, slowly, be patient, have dispassion and let them go. He will give you a huge support and help. He will show it and he will remove it. We will have to patiently wait, watch it and be honest with yourself. The way Heather has said in the interactive session, we need to be honest with our, you know, like our state of mind and slowly, vigilantly observe it and come out of it. It will take some time, but you will have to be patient. And what Nana is saying, the world will mirror your defects and weaknesses and the reasons as to why you are far from self-realization. Problems arise because of identification with the body and its limitations. Once you forego the ego, little self and the body bondage, true happiness will descend on you. That is God realization or enlightenment. What is your core teaching, Nana? The next question that was asked was, what is your core teaching? Then Nana says, all must remain in a sorrowless state. We should all go beyond sorrow, which cannot be purchased in the market. Nana says, you cannot purchase happiness in the market. You cannot purchase sorrowless state in the market. That state will happen only through enlightenment. Consequentially, peace and positive vibrations will emanate from you. So what he says is, once you realize yourself, peace and positive vibrations will emanate from you. For self-realized souls, there is no I. Hence, they are peaceful, happy, and joyous. One has to dip in Jnana Ganga, the river of knowledge, to get salvation. Then the next question that was asked to Nana was, Nana, what is the cause of sorrow? So you have told us about the birth of human life, why we take birth, and how we need to get enlightenment. Now you tell us, what is the cause of sorrow? So Nana says, every thought, good or bad, created by the mind is the cause of sorrow, as it takes you away from God. only by spiritual surgery, only by spiritual surgery one can get rid of sorrow. While Sri Ramana asked us to probe the I, that is having, while Sri Ramana asked us to probe the I, that is having the sorrow. So what Nana is saying here is, the cause of sorrow is nothing but every thought of yours, be it good or bad, is the cause of suffering. So you will have to, and for this to go away, you need a spiritual surgery. In which, in Ramana, and the Ramana's way of expression was, you probe into who this I is, then you will know the source of sorrow. And in Ramakrishna's word, Nangar actually mentioned about how everybody addressed this. And in terms of Ramakrishna, he advised us to look into the cause of sorrow. When the mind holds onto the names and forms, it results in attachment. And see, Nangaru has already mentioned the expression of Ramana. Now he is expressing what Ramakrishna felt about suffering. What he said was, Ramakrishna advised us to look into the cause of suffering. And what did Ramakrishna say? When the mind holds on to names and forms, it results in attachment. That paved the way for sorrow. And once you are attached to names and forms, you become sorrowful. One can get rid of attachment only by surrendering to the Almighty or by self-inquiry. So Ramakrishna said, you get rid of this attachment by surrendering yourself to the Almighty. And Bhagavan said, you do self-inquiry and come out of this. Thereafter, one wouldn't be bound by one's thoughts. So next, Nana was posed the question, how far do rites and rituals help one in spiritual life? So Nana answered, the answer Nana gave was, they are only tools to discipline the mind. What Nana is telling is, rites and rituals, how far are they really useful to spiritual life, was the question asked. Nana is saying, they are only tools to discipline the mind. The purpose is to do mano-nigraham, means control over the mind. What are rites for? To control the mind. Your rituals that you do, the prayers that you do, or the good work you do, all these are done to bring a control to your mind and thereby achieve indriya nigraham. So when you have a control over your mind, all your indriyas will also come into control. Done with involvement, it helps in purification of the mind and the body. Though to an extent they help in achieving physical and mental fitness, rituals by themselves are not the goal. So here Nana very clearly tells us, rites and rituals are for purification of the mind. If you do with the right attitude and with dedication, you will get a control over your mind, which will help control all your senses, and slowly your mind will get purified. And unless your mind purifies, you will not attain oneness. So for purification, it is required, but it's not the goal in itself. It is only a means to get to the destination. So the last question that was posed to Nangaru was, Nana, what is your message for the readers? And Nana beautifully explains, understand that one's welfare is ingrained in everyone's welfare. He says, our welfare is ingrained in everybody's welfare. Our words and deeds should lead our fellow beings into the path of peace and bliss. He says, the words we utter or the actions we do should give peace to ourselves and peace to all around us. One should not waste one's precious time in vain thoughts and actions. He says, never waste your time on wrong things, wrong thoughts, negative thoughts. He says, utilize, make use of your time preciously for talking good, doing good, speaking good, and with good intentions. One must offer all one's work to God. As Nana always says, whatever work you do, you just, you know, like, dedicate it to God itself. You know, you give it as a gift to God. All your work, let it be a gift to God. Be aware that spiritual progress is as important as material prosperity. And a life devoid of self-knowledge is fruitless, as it does not give one liberation. So this is how Nana ended the session, by giving his message to the world through the book Life Positive. I will repeat this last answer of Nana, because this is the message that Nana gave to the world through this article, which was his last article before he left his body. And this was published in the magazine itself, is Life Positive. Your message to the readers is,
understand that one's welfare is ingrained in everyone's welfare. Our words and deeds should lead our fellow beings into the path of peace and bliss. One should not waste one's precious time in vain and in vain thoughts and actions. One must offer all one's work to God. Be aware that spiritual progress is as important as material prosperity, and a life devoid of self-knowledge is fruitless as it does not give one liberation. So here ends our English session today, and I will continue by speaking about Heather in Telugu and also the interview in Telugu as quickly as I can. Thank you all. Om Sri Nana Paramatmane.